Capitão.
Testing to software. Okay. Testing. Okay. That's better. Yeah. So today is it the 11th or 12th? 11th of July. Yeah, 11th of July, 2019, Thursday class. We still got 2 more minutes, don't worry. Okay, I think we can get ready for puja, exactly 8:10.
Can we have Xiaoping and Jenna?
Yes. Yeah. So you are given the honor to help to light the incense and the candle. The rest of us can stand, form a circle to make the puja offering. Okay. Okay, let us rejoice. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Okay, you all can be seated. Okay, very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 12th of July, 2019, Thursday class. We are having it at Sui An and Bifong's house in Subang. For those who are new, what we have done is we just had a simple pre-puja before we commence our chanting. So this puja is for us to develop the faith, sadha, then to rejoice. That's why we say sadhu. Then we make offering to the triple gem. And these are very important offering that can remind us of the certain important aspect of the Dhamma. Later on when we do the puja chanting, you will understand. So now let us prepare ourselves, compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the chanting. Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. Swakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho sanghang namami. Okay, you can be seated, then turn to page 1 of the chanting book. We shall chant from the Vandana onward. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, dhammang saranang gacchami, sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati pata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adina dana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapada samadhiyami. Suramiraya majjhapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Now we will chant the Padipa Puja offering of light. Ganna sarapaditena dipena tamadangsina tiloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonudang ganda sambarayutena dupena hang sugang hina pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bhajana motamang vanna ganda guno petang etang kasuma santatin pujayami molindas siri pada sarorohe pujemi buddhang kasumenanena punnena matena cha hotu mokhang pupang milayati yata idang me kayo tata yati vinasabhavang adivase tunobante paniyang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivase tunobante pali parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivase tunobante bojanang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang. Now you are chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all these puja offerings. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense, which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the dana parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration, by the power of all these merits, born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of saddha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Tripa Jama. Bedang pujaya me. Damang pujaya me. Sanghang pujaya me. Okay, you all can be seated. We can have half an hour of silent meditation. Yeah, we were off the light, off the light. Then I will set the alarm. The alarm will be for half an hour. Already know how to meditate, you can straight away proceed. And I understand there are two new people. So I will give you some simple instruction so that you can develop the ability to train your mind, to develop the meditative inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. If you meditate before, you can also do based on whatever training that you have been taught or you are familiar with. What I need to let you understand is you must understand what you are doing in the name of meditation, which means precisely what is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So what the Buddha taught is very simple. He said the most important thing in meditation is to develop heedfulness. Dhammapada verse 21 explained this very clearly. And in the words of the Buddha, he said heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. So this shows the importance of heedfulness. If you are not heedful in the midst of life, you cannot become enlightened. You need to have this quality of mind, heedfulness. And to be heedful, Dhammapada verse 23 explained there are two very important aspects of training that you need to do so that you are heedful. First is to have this mind that is trained so that it is ever mindful. To be ever mindful, you have to train the mind to be mindful first. So that's what we are doing here. So all meditation, if you have the understanding, is to train the mind to be in the state of awareness or mindfulness in the present moment. When you are mindful, you cannot think. When you are mindful, you cannot develop the heedlessness. Means you are always mindful of the object of meditation that you use to anchor your mind so that the mind will not wander off. This is only needed if you have not trained your spiritual faculties. According to the Buddha, there are 5 spiritual faculties that can allow you to understand his spiritual teaching and allow you to develop the meditative mind. They are Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. These are Pali words. The equivalent translation is faith. Saddha is faith. Faith in the Buddha and his teaching. Virya is spiritual zeal or tenacity to cultivate his teaching. The third spiritual faculty is Sati. Sati is normally translated as mindfulness, but the real meaning is awareness. So the mind that is aware is a spiritual faculty. Then the fourth one is Samadhi. Samadhi is the stability of mindfulness that can allow your mind to be collected and unwavering in the midst of life. So that is Samadhi. Then with Sati and Samadhi, you can see things as they are. Your mind will not stir and react to sense experience like normal people. That's why you can develop wisdom. When you see things as they are clearly, means that is the truth, that is the reality, that is the Dhamma. So wisdom is the 5th spiritual faculty. When you have this 5, your mind will be in the meditative state, because these 5 spiritual faculty will prevent the opposite 5, which the Buddha called mental hindrance, from arising. So people who don't have this spiritual faculty, they will have this mental hindrance. They will have a lot of sensual desire and ill will, the first 2 mental hindrance, followed by lethargic mind or sleepiness of mind. They call it sloth and torpor. The 4th one is restlessness of mind. The mind is not calm, not peaceful, not aware within. That's why it's restless. It thinks a lot, it wanders off very fast. This restlessness of mind comes from your lack of heedfulness in the midst of life, or your lack of mindfulness when you live your daily life. So restlessness of mind can also arise when you neglect your precepts, when you make mistakes, when you encounter life problem. Then it gives rise to worry, anxiety, fear, sorrow and lamentation. So when you have all this problem confronting you or causing you mental restlessness, this hindrance become very powerful. That's why people cannot meditate. The last one is doubt, when they don't understand the teaching. They have doubt as what is meditation and how to develop it. So people who are not trained, who don't have the spiritual faculty, the moment they try to meditate, they will have problem because of the mental hindrance. Your mental hindrance are mental states that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness and inner awareness. So what I normally do is I will teach you a skillful means to temporarily keep the mental hindrance at bay so that they will not disturb you. We call this the mind sweeping method, combined with loving kindness or metta. We will sweep the mind from the forehead down. Then as we sweep, we feel, we don't think, we just feel and we relax into whatever area of awareness that we place our mind. If you can detect any tension, any stress within, you will just relax it, feel it soothingly, relax. By doing this, you can decondition the heedless thinking. Then it will become peaceful, calm and aware. So this is a form of deconditioning, so that the mental hindrances are not there, so that they will not disturb you, and you can develop a form of calmness, peacefulness, and inner awareness. Then I will teach you anapanasati to anchor that calmness or that awareness, so that you are always mindful within the moment. Anapanasati is mindfulness of the in and out breath. So that one, you anchor it to your breath, which is your object of meditation. But if you got other object of meditation, you can also use whatever object of meditation or method and technique that you are familiar with. They are just skillful means to anchor the mind, so that you can train your mind to stabilize that mindfulness or awareness. So basically, these are the understanding that you must have. Now I will go into the detail. You just make sure you have a stable posture, relax body and mind, completely relax. Make sure your backbone is straight. Then close your eye. Maintain attention at your forehead. Feel, just feel, don't think, feel. You can detect any tension, tightness or stress within. You just mindfully relax, relax and relax, so that all the whatever stress and tension within your forehead muscle, you relax them all. Then you sip them down to your eye muscle, do the same, feel any tension, tightness or stress within, relax them all. So after a tired day, normally your eye muscles are quite tired. So feel it soothingly, relax, relax and relax. Then you sweep it down to your facial muscle. Again, feel. Make sure each and every strand of the facial muscle is relaxed. Then in order to help you relax further, you can visualize yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. If you can smile, you have joy, then you can relax. That's how your facial muscle will naturally relax. Then you chant or radiate loving kindness to yourself. You can recite following what I recite. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. Feel your entire body and mind, each and every cells within, having this well-being and happiness. Then you can repeat it. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy. May this body and mind too be without suffering, free from all suffering, both mental and physical suffering. May its mind state too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May this body and mind of mine too be free from all harm and danger. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within your hearts. Then you can repeat this loving kindness or metta by radiating them to your loved ones. May all my loved ones, including my parents, my brothers, my sister, my good friend, my special friends, and whoever whom you have affection or relationship with, wish them, may my loved ones too be well and happy. You can visualize them and radiate this loving kindness. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May their body and mind too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then you repeat this metta. You read it to all beings. May all beings within the vicinity of this Brother Sui An and Mi Fong's house, including all Kayanamitas and all beings known and unknown, seen and unseen, may they all too be well and happy. May their body and mind too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we extend this metta. May all beings within the whole of Subangjaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, Mother Earth, and all beings within our solar system, extending to all beings within our galaxy, our Milky Way, and the entire universe. May their body and mind too be well and happy. May they all too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful. Then you just relax, silence your mind, and go back to the facial muscle. Just feel, relax them all. Then you sweep the mind down to your neck, feel, relax. Shoulder, feel, relax. Hand, feel, relax. Back to shoulder, feel, relax. Because you just feel and relax, you didn't think. That's why you cannot create thought. And this is a good way to decondition your heedless thinking, to temporarily keep your mental hindrance from arising. Then you move your attention down to your heart area. Just relax completely and feel the heart area. You can detect your heartbeat or any vibration. You just silence everything and stay there. But if you are new, you're still not trained, not sensitive, your mindfulness are still very weak, then never mind, you can't detect anything, but you can feel, like you feel your forehead, feel your chest area, then any tension, any tightness or any stress within, you just relax it, relax, relax and relax, feel it soothingly, relax. Then you sweep your attention down to your stomach, feel, relax. Abdomen, feel, relax. Then leg, feel, relax. Buttock, feel, relax. Then you repeat the whole of this mind sweeping method backward. From the buttock, feel, relax. Then leg, feel, relax. Then abdomen, silent everything, feel, relax. Then move your attention to your stomach, feel, relax. Then up to your chest area again, silent everything and feel, relax. Then move to your shoulder, feel, relax. Hand, feel, relax. Back to shoulder, feel, relax. Neck, feel, relax. Then you sweep keep it up to your facial muscles, each and every strength. Feel and relax them all. Feel your facial muscles soothingly relax, relax and relax. Then your eye muscle, do the same. Feel, relax. Then your forehead, feel, relax. By now, your mind should be in a state of tranquil calmness, peacefulness. But you need to anchor this calm mind or peacefulness of mind. When you are calm and peaceful without thought, you are just aware. So this sati or awareness need to be stabilized. So the Buddha recommended anapanasati. Anapana is in and out breath. Sati is mindfulness. So anapanasati is mindfulness of the in and out breath. What you can do is you silence everything and feel the breathing in front of your nostril. Then like the Buddha's instruction, breathing in, the mind is aware. Breathing out, the mind is aware. So just train yourself in this way. Initially, if you are still new, you cannot maintain mindfulness. You will come to realize split second your mind is gone. It has already wandered. You are no longer with the breathing. The thought will come, the mental hindrance will come. But don't worry. Every time the mind wanders off, you bring it back to the breathing. Wanders off, you bring it back to the breathing. Not long, maybe a few minutes. It will stabilize. It will stabilize. Then as you are able to develop this anapanasati, slowly the mindfulness of the in and out breath will happen. And when this mindfulness of the in and out breath or anapanasati starts to take its ability to be mindful of the breathing, then it will settle down and make your mind very peaceful, very calm. That mindfulness without thought will bring about the spiritual calmness. They call it piti, a type of spiritual calmness. Sometimes if you happen to experience it for the first time, it can like rapture in your mind. The calmness is so fulfilling. So like if it's the first time you are having it, you feel so nice because that calmness, the peacefulness bring about a type of joy. They call it piti, spiritual joy or spiritual rapture. It's like there is this type of joy which is quite intense, rapture within your body. Then you continue to relax into it, maintain the training of the mindfulness of the in and out breath. Then remember to relax into whatever mind state that arise or energy that build up. When the mindfulness become more and more continuous, it will start to develop energy. The continuity of mindfulness can build up a type of calm or peacefulness that can make you very calm. You can get absorbed into it. But as long as you know how to relax, it will regulate itself. Then this piti will become more and more refined. Then you will experience another type of peace which is more intense. You will experience sukhang or spiritual blissfulness of mind. Your mind become like very blissful. And during that time, your breath, like long breath, every movement in and out is like very clear to you. The mindfulness is very clear. The sati is very clear. Then that clarity is the awareness within. With awareness, you experience all this calmness, spiritual calmness, piti, sukham, then if you continue to relax into it, it will develop further. It will become more and more refined, more and more refined, until finally, after some time, it will become very quiet, very still, like there is no more breathing. Even there is breathing, it's like very subtle, very difficult for your normal mindfulness to detect. When this happens, it's a good sign. It means you have progressed. Then you continue to relax into it, silence everything, and just stay with the subtle breathing until the mind finally enters sati and realizes the silent mind, which we call pasati. Pasati is the tranquility of mind, stillness of mind. Your mind becomes very quiet, very still, very tranquil, like no movement at all. So you have to train your mind until it enters sati, realize this pasati. This is your silent mind, this is your meditative mind. This is the mind that can understand many things, and you can use it to meditate. So now I will let you train your mind. Then when the alarm rings, I will ring the bell 3 times. Then you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Okay. Okay, I only pity Suyan. Every time meditate, ding dong. Then he got to do the work. Yeah. So we have Akong here with you, Brother Sia. He is very, very senior. He is my super senior in MU Engineering Faculty. I think they were first or second batch yours?
First batch.
Yeah, in MU. Yeah, for Singapore, yeah, you know. First batch in MU. So, our pioneers, our real senior, super senior. He's mechanical. Very good. How old already? 80. 81, huh? See? 81. I'm only 65. So, 16 years. But he looked good, very healthy. And he has faith. Very good, very sadhu. So what now long? How many months?
Oh, I was there 3 weeks.
3 weeks only, oh, okay. I saw your WhatsApp photo. Yeah, sadhu. The Vasa. Oh, okay. So it's Ajahn Vimok there, the mindfulness center. Is it that place? Pipa, I don't know what. That is the mindfulness center, yeah. I went there twice, I think. Last time, after the Bangkok seminar in the year 2013, they invited me there to give a talk, the seminar talk. So they have a joint organizer, the World Buddhist University, together with this mindfulness center, and there's another one, don't know what university. They all three combined. And they invited about two from every country, I think total about 10. One monk and one lay person. So Malaysia also we have two. I represent the lay person. So they have one lady nun, I think, from China. Singapore and also, of course, Thailand is the host. Then I think from a few countries, I think five countries. I don't think so. Vietnam, yeah. So that time was 6 years ago. Yeah, then I went to that center. Pipala something, very long words. They call it the mindfulness center. We travel quite far, actually. Yeah, from Bangkok. 2 hours plus. Yeah. It's somewhere near Rayong. Near Rayong. Ajahn Anand there. Yeah, very good. Susan also here. Long time no see. Sadhu. Yeah. So now we continue. Turn to page 6. We were chant the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Do you have another mic? Oh, yeah. Oh, that one. Oh, okay.
Samanta Chakvalisu Atra Gatan Devata Sadhammam Munirajas Sunantu Sakkamokkha dang dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta
Bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa ittipeso bhagava arahang samma sambuddho vijacharana sampanno sugato lokavido anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusanam buddho bhagavati svakato bhagavata dhammo sanditiko akaliko ehipaseko opanayiko pachatang veditato vinohiti supatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho ujjupatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho nyayapatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho samicipatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho yadidam chattari purisa yukkane atha purisa pugala essa bhagavato savakasango ahuneyo pahuneyo dakineyo anjali karaneyo anutarang punyaketang lokasati sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Tripaja. Buddhan pujeme Dhammang pujeme Sanghang pujeme. Okay, you all can be seated. Okay. Now we have completed the invocation to the devas. We will now commence the second session. Second session is meditation reporting, followed by whatever question that you may have. You can ask on meditation, the Dhamma, or the teaching, any aspect of it, and also how to apply the Buddha Dhamma or whatever Dhamma you have learned to allow you to understand life, live life, and also overcome whatever problems you may have in life. So you just have to put up your hand. Tammy, pass the mic to her.
Good evening, Vajra and all the Kalamitas. Okay, my question is regarding, I would like to know the difference between consciousness and awareness.
Okay.
Yeah, because sometimes I feel that
it's... Yeah, it's a very good question. Yes, it's a very relevant and very good question. Actually, you remind me of the previous Thursday. I forgot to answer Christina's question, you remember? Christina sent me, I think there's a Mahayana story, or the what, Dhamma inside there. Then they talk about the 9 type of consciousness. So when she texts me, it was the Thursday morning, I think. Then he said, can Brother Teo explain? I think her request was specifically the 8 consciousness and the 9 consciousness. Then that night, I think we had a more important topic. So we took almost the full session to discuss that topic. Then at the end only, I told her, I got not enough time to explain. So maybe tonight is the condition we can explain them. So the question is very good. What is the difference between awareness and consciousness? These two are very important. How many of you understand? Nobody. Cannot be after so long. Better write on the whiteboard. What is the difference? Between awareness and consciousness. Anybody want to try? Based on what you have learned. Very good.
When one is aware.
Yes. English. Use the mic for the recording. Very good.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah.
Maybe this is just my...
I know. You should understand. Don't worry. You just answer the way you understand it. It should be correct.
When one is conscious, it doesn't mean that he is aware.
Correct. Very good.
He is conscious in the sense that he can hear, he can see, he can feel and feel the tactile or whatever,
yes.
But doesn't mean that he is
aware.
Mindful or aware.
Yes.
He
very
could
good.
Be in a dreamy state.
He could be heedlessly
heedless,
thinking.
Yeah.
Or rattling off the thought process and all those things. Very good. Thank you, Sadhu. So basically, use the mic. Adam is like,
we yeah. can still have awareness yeah. even though yeah. we are unconscious, right? Because, like, for example, the people said we are in a hospital and then we, like, in operating theater, we can still be aware of our surrounding even though we have already been, like, put into sleep. And we can still...
Are you sure you can? When you are in the unconscious, you are knocked off. What you heard is out-of-body experience. Out-of-body experience means the consciousness come out. When the consciousness come out, they actually can see, can hear. They are like aware. But when they speak, the human being cannot hear. And the human being cannot see them. Because it's the mind that come out. So that one is different. What NB is trying to explain is the normal meaning of this word. You see, as a human being, we have this conscious moment in life. Conscious means what? When you are conscious of life means what? You are not asleep. You are not in the unconscious or the subconscious sleeping mode. But people who meditate, they can go into the sleeping mode and yet maintain awareness inside. That one is possible. But you have to be very good. That's why just now I asked you, when they sedate you, are you sure you can be aware? If you can, means I said to you, you are very good. That one very few people can do. So awareness is an awareness that is within. You are aware of outside. You are aware of whatever that goes on within your form and mind. So that is inner awareness. So awareness got two stages. First stage of awareness is just the normal worldly awareness. The worldly awareness is there is an awareness from inside. You are aware of whatever that is going on. But most people are not aware because when their thought arises, they are lost in thought. They no longer have the ability to be aware. But when you have this training of the mind to be aware, you will always be with your true mind. And the inner awareness is very different. Very, very different. So that one can be aware of your thinking, your thought process, your consciousness, your whatever movement, activity, whether physical movement, mental movement, or even nature's movement. Then this type of awareness, one is the specific phenomenal awareness. It's just aware of phenomena. Means the awareness and the phenomena move as one. The other one, when it's completely silent inside, it is the silent awareness without a center. We call it the spacious awareness. Your awareness becomes one with nature, the oneness nature. It has merged into, you can say the surrounding or whatever, but actually it's the oneness nature, where there is no center from where it will dwell. It has merged with the oneness. So that is awareness. Awareness is equivalent to sati. The real meaning of sati is just aware, before the knowing. When you are mindful, the pure awareness, before the knowing, there is sati. That's why a lot of people fail to understand what consciousness is. So consciousness comes from the word conscious. When you become conscious, means when you are not in the sleeping mode. Then when you arise, after you wake up, you become conscious. Conscious of what? Conscious of life, isn't it? Because you start to live life, isn't it? You starts to, like, in activity. So you are conscious of life, conscious of living. And you have these senses in your body that can allow you to be conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. So this sixth sense can give rise to the sixth type of consciousness. So in the Mahayana tradition,
they talk about the 9 type of consciousness. The usually thought and discussed one is the 8 type of consciousness. Because a lot of this Mahayana teaching, they are like very impressive. They will tell you about the 8 type of consciousness. They always start with the 6. Ti liu se. Ti chi, ti pa. So 6 consciousness, 7 consciousness, and the 8 consciousness. But for Theravada, you only know one word, vijnanang. Understand? So consciousness is always defined as vijnanang. So this one, you only got one word, vijnanang. This word actually is very deep in its meaning. That's why when it comes to the aggregates of mind, the Buddha always used Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana. Okay? Then there is another word, Chitta. You heard of Chitta, isn't it? Chitta. Yeah. So what is the difference between Vijnana and Chitta? Then there is another word, Mano. When the Buddha talked about Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, he always used this word, Mano. Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Then when it comes to four foundation of mindfulness, what did he use? Citta nupassana. And what is citta nupassana? Mindfulness or what? No, content of consciousness. Understand? So this citta is actually your thought. This one is actually your thought. The content of consciousness already went in. This vijnana, if you check the 12 link, paticca samuppada, the 3rd link is vijnana. First 2 link is avijja paccaya sankhara. Okay? Then sankhara paccaya what? Vijnana. So that is the one. This one is just the consciousness without the content. Once the content went in, vijnana paccaya nama rupa. This is the 5 aggregate of form and mind. This is the one that the Buddha is interested in the paticca samuppada. And this is what the thought is all about. This one is the nama rupa. When you input the content of consciousness, then this one becomes the 5 aggregate of form and mind. Because from here, this is the pure consciousness. The Buddha said in the seeing, there's only the seeing consciousness. No one to see as yet. The egoic mind hasn't come in yet. So at this stage, the content hasn't gone in. So what is happening is, due to ignorance, dependent on ignorance, wanting to know, wanting to understand or experience, you start to think. So what is thinking? Sankara is thinking. Thinking means you make contact with the brain. You understand? When you make contact with the brain, like the physical experiment, what happened? Mental consciousness lack up. Understand? So this is the mental consciousness without its content yet. So this is mental consciousness. Without its content yet. Understand? Then from here, through your perception, you input the content of consciousness. And through your sankhara, you again your views, your opinion, your condition, you react, you stir. So all this create karmic consciousness. So this is the citta, the thought, which has the content. And this one got wholesome and unwholesome. This is what karma is all about. So the Mahayana teaching about the nine type of consciousness is very good. That's why for Theravada you only know one, Vijnanam. But you use this word citta, mano, without understanding the difference. I realize hardly anybody understands the difference. Sometimes they interuse. So the first five type of consciousness is very clear. What are the first five type? Yes, you have your senses, isn't it? They are related to your five physical senses. You have the eye, seeing consciousness. So, seeing. Hearing. Smell. Taste. And touch. Eh? Touch or tactile. Eh? So these are the first five types of consciousness. And what is the sixth one? Sixth consciousness is what? Sixth consciousness is actually sanya, perception. What happens is, when your eye sees something, initially, like what the Buddha said, in the seeing, there's only the seeing consciousness. No one to see as yet. You understand? That is the pure consciousness. Like the light bulb just light up. It's a nature's phenomenon. So that is the pure consciousness, without the contact. The pure seeing, like the baby. The brain got nothing. It cannot input any content because there is no conditioning, no views, no opinion, no learning as yet. So this is the mental consciousness that arises. Then after that, what you do? Like you look at the painting or the Buddha Rupa. Unless your mindfulness is very stable, you can be at the moment of seeing consciousness before the perception comes in. Can you do that? Very few people can do that. Because the moment you see, you perceive. Because you are so conditioned. And how do you see? You labor. Two words, two concepts. You never really see. If you really see, the direct seeing is that thing, no words, as it is. That is the pure consciousness. That's why the Buddha said, in the seeing is only the seeing consciousness. No one to see as yet. Then the perception coming. You start to perceive. So the sixth consciousness is perception. So this perception link all the first five together with the brain, the sixth consciousness, they are all connected to the mind. The mind is the common denominator. Understand? So when the mind perceives, this sixth consciousness arises. And perception is the aggregates. Of mind. That brings the external form form into the mind. So this external form is the sense data. You understand? At the moment of perception, that consciousness is the sixth consciousness. Then what happened after that? It's still within the same namarupang. But because we have this brain, the views, opinion, and the conditioning, so this one, before you are enlightened, that is what they call the egoic mind. You heard of the egoic mind, right? Yeah. So the egoic mind is actually the seventh consciousness. So this is the sixth, seventh consciousness. This one is the egoic or discriminative mind. After you perceive, what happened? Your conditioning, your brain, your memory, your views, your opinion, your belief system, this will come out and act. And this is egoic. Why? Not enlightened yet. Understand? And because it's egoic, it's discriminative. It will develop discrimination, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. That's why your mind stirs. This is how you create mental hindrance. Every moment of consciousness, when you see something, you tend to stir your mind because there is preference. You discriminate, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. So it throughout the day, every moment of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, and even the thought process, you react and stir your mind. What is happening to you is you are creating mental hindrance all the time until it becomes habitual. You understand? So this is what habitual tendency is all about. When habitual tendency develops, it becomes latent. We call it latent tendency, anusaya. Very latent, because like automatic already. Immediately see, no need to think, straight away. You will react automatically. It's like reflex action because you are so conditioned. So this seven consciousness is the one that creates the karmic thing. You create karmic during this time. Yeah. But the intensity depends on the full movement, which is the eight consciousness. So this eight consciousness, the Mahayana call it the alaya consciousness. You heard of alaya, isn't it? Huh? This word, alaya or storehouse consciousness, means all the karmic accumulation. So this eight consciousness is actually the result of the seven consciousness. So this seven consciousness is like an organ. This one is like an organ. Wait. Correct spelling or not? Yeah. So this is the organ. You know why it's the organ? Because the perception brings in the external sense data. You understand? Then this external sense data triggers this organ to manifest the eight consciousness. You understand? But this one, even though it's the organ, is the one that create the discriminative view. So this is the one down here, sorry. So this egoic or discriminative mind this is the mundane mind, yes. This is the one, even though they call it like the organ, it's easier for you to understand. Perception brings in the external sense data, okay? So upon contact of the mind, because this one is thinking, you heard of this word concording or not? Sankara Sanya. You know what is Sankara Sanya? Sanya is perception. The moment you perceive, you think. The moment you perceive, you think. So you create concoction of the mind. Concording. Achan Buddha does call it cooking. Like inside there cooking. Perceive, think. Like a lot of mental concording. So this is what happened. The 6, 7, and 8 is very fast. Very, very fast. Unless you are mindful, you cannot see them. But when you have stability of mindfulness, you can be at the moment of consciousness, vijnana. You can be even at the moment of content of consciousness when it's input. And this nama rupang, you can see them. The whole citta, you can see them. Then before you stir the views and opinion, you can also be aware of your mental movement. That's why you will come to understand why the unenlightened living being, they act according to memory. Acting according to memory is not acting at all. Because that is the only instrument you know how to act. Most of you act through what? Your views, your opinion, your knowledge, and your memory, isn't it? That is the only instrument you know. But after you understand the Dhamma, you're supposed to have wisdom, understand or not? Dhamma understanding. That's why you have to acting according to understanding or wisdom is the true action. But how many of you can act that way? Because your first and second turning wisdom, yoniso manasikara, initial wisdom, not stabilized. That's why it cannot come out and prompt you, and you cannot act. You straight away retreat from memory. You act out of what? Your fear, your phobia, your worry, your anxiety, your delusion, your selfishness, your egoic mind, which is discriminative. You will start to see all this at the beginning of your cultivation, where your daily mindfulness comes to be. You start to see all this. That's why you will straighten your view. You will not do that anymore. Because that one all bring about the wrong thought. And what are wrong thought? Thought that condition your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your insecurity. And all these are suffering. That's why wrong thought makes you miserable. That's the reason why the teaching, the Buddha said, you must have right thought. Follow Noble Eightfold Path. Born of right view. What is right view? Right understanding. Wisdom. That's why you have to act according to understanding or wisdom. And that is true action. Means you act following Noble Eightfold Path. Start with right view, right understanding. Then you act. And there are three major areas of right understanding. Right understanding or right view with regards to the law of karma. That's how the advice of the Buddha come about. That's how his teaching come about. That's how the precept comes about. And that's how the Noble Eightfold Path comes about. The whole thing. Then the second is right view with regards to how you function as a human being. Paticca Samuppada. Citta Niyama. The nature's order of mind. How the mind actually functions following the dwelling. And the third right view is with regards to the essential Dhamma. All of truth. Dhamma that the Buddha teaches. That's why it's called Dhamma Niyama. So these three, Kama Niyama, Chitta Niyama, and Dhamma Niyama are very powerful, very important. So these six and seven and eight consciousness is nothing more than our five aggregate or form of mind. You understand? The moment the six consciousness come about, this is still pure perception. Understand that? It's still pure. No discrimination yet. But the moment you act according to your views, opinion, and your conditioning, and your belief system, that's when that discriminative mind, the egoic mind, surfaces. And this is where the problem starts. This is where all the wrong thought, the discrimination, the stirring of the mind, the reaction. But this one is without wisdom before you are enlightened. But the moment you are enlightened, even Sotapan, they will have the right understanding. The first three factors is already severe. They already know that this form and mind is not real, not permanent. Not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can cling on to and hold on to and say, this is me, this is I. That's why this ego, the egoic mind, they have been attenuated until like it have the understanding that there is nobody inside there. It will understand anicchang, dukkang, anatta. That's why when you are a sotapan, you are already very, very safe. But at the seventh consciousness, there are still other factors that can affect them. Like the sotapan, they still have sensual desire and ill will. There is still craving, there is still desire, there is still dislike, aversion, but not strong. Not strong. The moment they become sakadagami, is attenuated. It's more or less very, very little left. That's why the moment they become anagami, sensual desire and ill will is completely rooted out. Then during that time, the last factors, they still have to work on it. Until finally, avijja also gone. Mana, avijja, restlessness of mind, attachment to form jhana and formless jhana, all five rooted out. The moment is rooted out, then this discriminative mind no more, because they become pure aggregate. You know what is pure aggregate, isn't it? Non-grasping. Non-grasping. Means there is no egoic mind to grasp and cling at feeling, cling at what you perceive, cling at what the mental activity or sankhara, mental state, that is being conditioned into. Then whatever you become conscious of through your A consciousness, the content of consciousness, because of your awareness, your wisdom, you will know how to act. And you will know how to input the pure content. And these are the eight consciousness that the Mahayana talk about. It's just the five aggregate of form and mind. Nothing else. The six consciousness is actually the sanya aggregate. Then this seven is actually the sankhara aggregate. The egoic mind, discriminative mind, is actually sankhara. Mental activity. Mental concording. This word. Mental. This movement is very active when you are heedless. Before you develop the ability to be aware, mindful. And you cannot see all this because this one, like, very fast. Split second, you already get angry. You already become emotional. You want to hit out already. That's the reason why when the Buddha teach sati, he talked about heedfulness. Without heedfulness, you cannot deal with life. You are unable to understand life. To understand life, you must have heedfulness. And to be heedful, there are two parts. Dhammapada verse 23 says, the constantly meditative, ever mindful, and steadfast one, if you stick onto these two practices, you will realize the supreme enlightenment, Nibbana, means assured enlightenment. So the heedful never die, verse 21, also the same. Whereas the heedless are as if dead. Then he said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless, means you will have eternal life, you will never die. No more rebirth. You will realize arahantship and beyond. So this part, ever mindful, constantly meditative, means constantly cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. You combine these two, you are heedful. And this one is in the midst of life. You have to be heedful, not only when you are in a retreat, in a form of meditation. That's why your daily mindfulness has to be very stable. And not only sati stable, you must have clear comprehension. That's why sati sampajana. That's the reason why Avijja Sutta, the 10th step, is very clear. The Buddha mentioned in the Avijja Sutta, you go to our website, it's all there. There are 10 steps for you to follow to develop the cultivation so that you can realize enlightenment in the here and the now. And the first step, actually the first 3 steps, all kayanamita you will have. Yeah. What is the first step? Yeah? To have? Noble friends or kayanamita, spiritual friends. If you are kayanamita, you don't have Dhamma friend, something wrong already. True or not? You have a lot, isn't it? Yeah. But two types, you know, kayanamita. One is just normal Dhamma friends who walk the path of Dhamma to cultivate, to progress along the path of Dhamma. The other one is Dhamma friend that has the Dhamma. That one is more difficult to find. Yeah. Like just now, Ingvi say, noble friends. This one that has the Dhamma, they can really guide you and teach you. They can really show you the way. So, the first step, all kayanamita will have. Second step also you will have. Why? Because you got kayanamita, you know when got Dhamma session. Isn't it? Like our case, you got Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday. Then even you got Dhamma talk in the temple and all those things. So listening to the Dhamma is step 2. And listening to the Dhamma is very important. Step 2 is the most important. It's from step 2 that you develop step 3 and step 4. What is step 3? Yeah? Should be very easy. After you listen to the Dhamma, what happened to you? No. Your practice, of course, you carry on separately. Understand? But when you listen to the Dhamma, you develop one. First turning up, faith is correct. Before the faith come in, you normally develop the first and second turning wisdom, isn't it? First turning wisdom is what? Suttamaya panya, means wisdom born of hearing the sutta. So if you keep on listening to the Dhamma, which is the true Dhamma, you will keep on straightening your view, isn't it? That's why you will have Suttamaya Panya. Then if you are not so sure of the teaching, what must you do? The Buddha said, second turning. You must reflect on it, contemplate and inquire. Why did the Buddha say this? Like the first noble truth, the 8th reality. You go through one by one. Why did the Buddha say birth is suffering? All is sickness and death is suffering. How can I understand that? Yeah? I need to reflect, isn't it? Contemplate, isn't it? And investigate into it, isn't it? To see whether it stands up to investigation or not, isn't it? So most of us, living in our, what they call human civilization or human society, we associate birth with what? Joy, isn't it? Looking forward to be a grandparent, or to be a daddy or a mommy. Yeah? Then, looking forward to the full moon. You only think of the good thing, but you never think of problematic thing. When there is complication, how? Not all the birth process are smooth sailing. There can be complication. Then sometimes the complication can be very, very traumatic. If the complication is such, the doctor come out and ask you, which one you want to save? the mother or the child. I tell you, that test is not easy to pass. Understand? Of course, you will tell the doctor, say both. But the doctor tell you, I try my best. But you have to decide. Otherwise, very difficult. Because the birth process, especially the unusual birth, they call it what? Breech. The leg come out first, not the head. Then there is complication. So they have to actually do something. But now they have cesarean and all those things. They can actually cut open the womb and take it out. But if it's choked inside there too long, not enough oxygen, and the mother got not enough strength or energy to push, it can die inside. That's why the doctor had to act fast. And they will do whatever they can. So when there is complication, then we see why birth is suffering. Then we contemplate and reflect. The moment there is birth, what follow? Old age, sickness and death. True or not? So the Buddha is correct. Anasara, birth is suffering. Birth is not what you think. But you don't have the wisdom to accept the reality of the moment, because birth, old age, sickness and death are first noble truth reality, common to all humanity. If you live life long enough, you have to confront them. And whether you suffer, afflicted, or you don't suffer, depend on your wisdom, your understanding, your Dhamma, to be able to understand all this. That's why the five daily contemplation is very important. The Buddha said you have to reflect, contemplate. This body of mind is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. It goes the way of nature. And this is non-self. Dependent originating, condition arising. Not a permanent unchanging entity, not me. I cannot cling on to it and say this is me, this is I. If I attach and cling to this body, what happens? I worry about it getting old, getting sick and die, and I will suffer. But I believe this is me. This is the ego, the personality. But this one is a vehicle, karmically conditioned out for you to come to this world to use. So use it. An element got no knowing goes the way of nature. How can it be you? And this element is in a state of flux, dependent originating, conditioned arising. Even the five aggregate of form and mind, with the life force animating you into a human being. So when you meditate, you will see all this, you will understand all this. That's why the Buddha free. Well, when he saw the foresight and he left the palace in search for enlightenment, answers to the problem of old age, sickness and death. The foresight is a holy man. That's why he goes that spiritual way to meditate. Then when he meditate and realize the dependent origination, the paticca samuppada, then he realized the form and mind is not him. His problem is gone. Birth, always sickness and death got nothing to do with him. It pertains to the form and mind, the human being. And that one is not him. But he realized his true nature. He went into cessation and realized nibbana. That's how he free. So this is the understanding that can unfold. So when you listen to the Dhamma, you will develop a lot of contemplative wisdom. You start to contemplate, reflect. Then you investigate. And when it stand up to investigation, your faith become very strong. Step three is faith in the Buddha and his teaching become very strong. That is step three. That's why listening to the Dhamma can bring about the first and second turning wisdom. And this second turning wisdom is after you have reflected, contemplated, and investigator, that is stand up to investigation, what happened? Your understanding start to stabilize and you become very confident. Then you can start to assimilate this understanding into your nature. That's how Yoniso Manasikara come about. Initial wisdom, born of first, second turning wisdom. Sutamaya Panya and Chitamaya Panya. So when this one stabilizes, you will have this yoniso manasikara. Then the next time when you fall sick or get old or about to die, that understanding will surface. This form of mind is impermanent, dependent originating, condition arising, not a permanent and changing entity, not you, non-self, empty. That's why the understanding straight away will free you. Because this body is not me, go the way of nature, of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. So, let it be. When condition is like that, things will be like that. Just accept the reality and you will be free. That's why the first 5 daily contemplation that the Buddha said, every day you must reflect and contemplate, is very important. The fourth one is separation from your loved one, prize possession. It's a separation will occur. Because these are all dependent originating entity or phenomena. Dependent on condition, they arise. When condition cease to be, they cease to be. That's why they were separate from you one day. Either when condition cease to be, that thing will just disappear. Even when they are still around, when your breath stops, your identity erased, you also have to separate from them. So separation from loved one, possession, and the things that you hold on to dearly will happen. This is a reality. You cannot escape. And when it happens, you have the Dhamma, you can accept. Because all these are the phenomenal of consciousness. Dependent originating, condition arising. Just phenomenal, arising and passing away. Follow nature's law. And they have the universal characteristics of impermanent, leading to suffering when you attach and cling. And because they are impermanent, it's empty, non-self, not what you think. So all this will surface. Then this wisdom will free your mind. This is how you actually develop it. Then every time you see something, this wisdom will surface. He is just the way he is. The world is the world. Condition like that, things will be like that. You will not stir your mind anymore. Even he says something very, very like, what they call like, abusive, yeah? Or something very like difficult for most people to endure. To you, with the understanding, you can still accept him for what he is. And you will have this compassion and love towards him. He said, forgive him, like Jesus said, for he know not what he is doing. Because it is what he is. Deluded people do deluded things. Angry people say angry things. Abusive people say abusive things. So they are just the way they are. And if I have this understanding, born of Yoniso Manasikara, I can come to terms with that reality. I can accept him for what he is. Then I am at peace. But I still act. Doesn't mean I don't act. And let him do what he likes. I still act. If I can apply Noble Eightfold Path with right view, I understand, I don't get angry, I don't stir, I don't react, then he will not get violent, is it? Correct? No? And when you can say, sorry, if I have caused you any misunderstanding, really, I would like to apologize. The whole scenario will be different, isn't it? Instead, you try to justify and argue with him, I tell you, you may not be that lucky. You can get into big trouble. So why not develop the right speech, the right action to resolve things amicably? If I cause you any misunderstanding or harm, I'd like to really apologize. I'm really sorry. And thank you for having the understanding to accept all this. Yeah. The moment you start to apologize, he also will tone down and say, don't worry, small thing. I also at fault. And then resolve amicably. Otherwise, I tell you, if you hit his ego, he is going to be more and more angry. Because he is still deluded, heedless. And he don't have Dhamma. You don't expect him to be like an angel, ever ready to forgive you. So all this is part and parcel of the teaching. So the Buddha said, after you listen to the Dhamma, you reflect, you contemplate, you develop the first and second turning wisdom, then you put it to test, it stand up to investigate. Step 3, the faith in the Buddha and his teaching is there. Then step 4 is, you have the initial wisdom. Yoniso Manasikara, the Buddha said. It's in the sutta, you go and check. And when you have this Yoniso Manasikara, you know what will happen to you or not? You become less reactive. Your mind in the midst of life because of this wisdom, you will not stir and react to sense experience like before. That's why you will have more equanimity. You will have more understanding. You are more at peace with whatever arises within life. That's why you have more and more moments of silence, more and more moments of awareness. You will have more and more space between thought. That's why your daily mindfulness will stabilize. Without yoniso manasikara, the Buddha says, step 5, which is sati sampajana, cannot happen. Cannot happen. You need to have the spiritual faculty to develop the meditative mind. And this meditative mind need to realize the wisdom, the initial wisdom, born of the listening to the Dhamma and the contemplative reflection of the Dhamma. Then when this wisdom stabilizes, step 6 and 7 is automatic, the Buddha said. You know what is step 6, isn't it? You will have sense restraint. What is sense restraint? Because your sati sampajana, daily mindfulness, with clear comprehension, is so stable. You have the initial wisdom. That's why you can see your defilement. Your evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. You can see them. And what constitutes evil, you know. Then you can follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil. Do good and purify the mind. And how to avoid all evil? Keep the precept. How do you keep the precept? I undertake the training rule to abstain from all this killing, causing harm to fellow being, lying, all this with the evil root there. The evil root behind the breaking of precept is very clear to you. Who will kill? Who will harm? Violent people, angry people, deluded people, selfish people. True or not? The evil roots are all there. That's why you can see your subtle craving, your subtle desire, your subtle ego manifesting. Wanting to be right. Wanting to argue. So all this, you start to see. These are the movements from your anusaya inside, latent, that they are very latent. They are always waiting to erupt, even the asava. You know what is asava? Very strong, like defilement, very strong, active inside there. And the other one is kilesa. You heard of these few Pali words, right? Kilesa, asava, and anusaya. All this come about because of your daily life. You don't have daily mindfulness. You are not heedful. You are heedless. And heedlessness lead to all these mental hindrances that make your behavior so habitual. That's why it develops into habitual tendency and it becomes very latent inside there. Then when it becomes very latent, it's like asava, waiting to erupt only. Shoot up. Waiting for condition. Eckhart call it pain body. Pain body means what? Emotional negativity. Nobody disturb you, it's dormant, not active. But when people step on your tail or step on your toe, I tell you, that pain body trigger off. That's why he call it the pain body. And we call it anusaya. Asava. Kilesa. Defilement. So all these are very active, the Buddha say. So without the daily mindfulness and the initial wisdom, you cannot deal with sense experience. At the moment of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, and thought process, you cannot handle. Because it functions so fast. It's like simultaneously, when you have to come out to live life, you have to act. You have to see. You have to make decisions. And everything moves so fast. If you don't have mindfulness, you cannot be at the moment of seeing, at the moment of hearing, smell, taste. You got no time to think. Thinking will not help you. What you need is wisdom, understanding. That's why this one is spontaneous. The initial wisdom, it will come out. The understanding, spontaneous, it will come out. And you will know how to act. You act with understanding. You no more act with delusion, ignorance. You act with Noble Eightfold Path. You have right view to accept the reality first. Then you cannot stir. Then you know what are your options, how to resolve things amicably. You know how to arise the right speech, right thought, right action. And you live your life in accordance through right livelihood. And before that, you have to constantly train your mind, the four right effort, to abandon the wrong thought that has a reason, the wrong speech, the wrong action. Then later on, when the initial wisdom arises, you can arise the second right effort to prevent them from arising. When you can prevent them from arising, means you have sense restraint already. You know already. These are wrong thoughts that condition the evil root, make you evil, cause you suffering. Just like straight away, it will subside because of the wisdom, the understanding, the initial wisdom. So sense restraint, when you can do that, your precept will be in order. You will not make mistake. Just like the Buddha said, after this step six, the step seven will arise. And what is step seven? The three way of right conduct. You will have this ability to act correctly. Right speech, right action, and right thought is always with you. That's why this Avijja Sutta, the first seven step is already very powerful. And the Buddha said, if you finish this first seven, you are at least a Sotapan, if not an Asakadagami. Because after that, after step seven, you know what the Buddha said? Step eight is what? Only can you really cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness. And you know what the four foundations of mindfulness is all about. You always start with what? After overcoming covetousness and grief, then only you start to cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness. Without the step seven, you think you can overcome covetousness and grief. Understand? If you can't even have sense restraint, you cannot have the three way of right conduct, how can you overcome covetousness and grief? No way. That's why after that, only you can go into the four foundation of mindfulness. And when you have the first seven step, four foundation of mindfulness is very, very easy. It's like you just breeze through. Because the training is already there. Initial wisdom there, daily mindfulness so stable. So all the words that the Buddha mentioned under the four foundation of mindfulness, that's why I understand. I know what those things are. It's not what most of the book try to explain to you through the commentary. It's nothing to do with all those doing. It's the awareness that is aware. And even in Kaya Nupasana, Vedana Nupasana, Chitta Nupasana, and Dhamma Nupasana, the Buddha always say, mindfulness of the body in the body, internally and externally. Do you know what these are? Internally means within your own kaya, the four posture, all the movement, the activity, sati sampajana, the daily mindfulness, you can be aware internally. You can see all this activity. That's why kaya nupasana is to train your mindfulness to stabilize it. Then after that, when you are able to be mindful within, you can be mindful of outside. That's why at that time, nobody taught me. I also don't know about all this type of sutta at that time. But I can see my awareness. The specific phenomenal awareness is, of course, with all the phenomena that move. Then I saw one guy, char kway teow, one day. Then I was so amazed, like I'm inside him, doing the fried kway teow. All his action and movement is like my mind, my awareness is inside there doing all those things. That is externally. Then feeling also same. You can feel. Then you can sense people's feeling outside. You can sense. Their content of consciousness, you can sense. They have become what? Because your sensitivity, your mindfulness, your wisdom, your understanding is there. And you can feel nature. The energy within nature. and the great being's nature. You can also feel them. You can draw from them. And people who are cultivating, they draw from your nature. And you know, they are around. They are everywhere. Their nature is everywhere. That's why the great being's nature, they are ever radiating for the cultivator of the way. So when you start to cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness, that is step 8, the Buddha say, when you start to do that, you will start to experience the 7 factors of enlightenment. They keep on arising because when you do it correctly, in accordance with what he taught you, when it comes to Dhammanupassana, you remember Dhammanupassana? There are 5 categories of practices. First one is mindfulness of what? The 5 mental hindrance. And these 5 mental hindrance, you will clear very fast because your daily mindfulness is already there. Then you will understand why the Buddha said, when you are aware, mindful, the 5 ways, you remember? The 5 ways to overcome unwholesome thought, like mental hindrance. The first way is still thought-based. Think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. So that one you can skip. Second one is think of the consequence, the danger of allowing this unwholesome thought to continue. Well, this is wrong thought, unwholesome thought with the evil root. It will make you evil. So you are determined to abandon them. But the third way is the meditative way. That's why he say, you just aware, silent. When there is restlessness of mind, when there is sensual desire, you will sloth and topple or doubt. No need to do anything. Just silence your mind and be with it. The Buddha gave the analogy of the pool of water. You remember? He asked Ananda to collect the water for him. Initially, first 2 times, murky. Why? The blockade passed by, stir. The water is not fit for drinking. But at night, he went, the water was clear. Then he took the water back with joy, and the Buddha asked him, what have you learned? The Buddha later explained to Ananda, see, when the blockade does not go across, you let it settle long enough, what happened? The sediment all settle. Clear water. You can drink. Your mind is the same. Your original state is stillness, tranquility, aware. All this so-called anger, hatred, emotion, sankhara activity, feeling, perception, consciousness, and sankhara, they are all not intrinsic. So when you feel something, you say, like when you get angry, emotional, or restless, or sensual desire arise. He said, you just silence your mind and stay with it. Then what happened? It will settle down there. The mind will settle down. But these are dependent originating state. It needs condition for it to continue to be angry or continue to be lustful or with anger and all those things. But because you silence your mind and don't do anything, just let the awareness be, then all this, when the condition is no more there, it will settle down. The sankhara will slow down. The emotion all will slow down and disperse. Then you realize the true mind again. Then finally you realize the original mind, the silent mind, the awareness within. Then you realize there is peace, there is tranquility, there is stillness, there is no more agitation, no more stress. Then you come to know, like the Buddha say, the mental hindrance, let's say sensual desire or ill will, you will come to know how the unarisen sensual desire come to be. How do you come to know? Well, it's through one of your senses. Before you get angry, there was no anger. True or not? How do you get angry? When people say something you don't like, or when you recall something that make you unhappy. So it's through one of your senses. That's why you will come to know, the Buddha said, how the unarisen mental hindrance come to be. Then when you meditate through the 3rd way and the 4th way to trace the origination factor, then retrospectively reverse it, you develop the understanding to understand how this arise a mental hindrance cease to be. So you know how the unarisen one arise, then you know how the arisen one cease, means you know how to free your mind. Then after that, when you already have that wisdom and understanding and you straighten your view, you will come to know that in the future, this mental hindrance will never arise again in you. That is what the Satipatthana is all about. That's how you meditate. Not according to what you read in the commentary and all those things. You just silent aware. Then through the daily mindfulness, mindfulness are what? 6 internal sense bases, 6 external sense bases. That's why after you develop mindfulness of the 5 mental hindrance, you move on to mindfulness of the 5 aggregate of form and mind. You see all these aggregate, rupa, vedana, sanya, sangara, and vinyana, very clearly. Then you can be at the moment of feeling, at the moment of perception, at the moment of even sankara activity, before it starts to concord and move, before it even stir, react, or think. It's like slow motion inside there. It cannot move. Your mindfulness is so stable, your wisdom, it can just stay there. I still remember, at the moment of contact, poof, of course no sound, eh? It stayed there. It didn't move. That's why upon contact, craving arise, or feeling arise. There goes such thing. When you release it, then feeling arise, the content of consciousness went in. Then because you lack wisdom at the moment of sense experience, feeling will condition craving straight away. You cannot cut a feeling. Without wisdom, you cannot cut. You cannot free. You cannot stop that movement from feeling to craving. It's automatic. That's why I realize without this yoniso manasikara wisdom understanding, cannot act. Totally cannot act. And when you have them, this one just come out and prompt you, and so fast, straight away it free you. There's a feeling become pure feeling, and you can laugh at it. You know, cannot move already. That's why the whole cultivation is so different. So this 5 aggregate of form and mind mindfulness, you will also go through. Then after that is the 6 internal and 6 external sense bases. This one, if you do the 4th way, you will be doing the mindfulness of the 6 internal sense bases and 6 external sense bases. This is how you trace the origination factor. How did anger come to be? How did fear come to be? How did restlessness of mind come to be? Sensual desire, ill will, and doubt. Even sloth and torment. So when you stay with it, it will cease to be. Then you start to understand the Dhamma. You start to understand that this form of mind is like the physics experiment, nature's law. Upon contact, it triggers our consciousness. Then the input of the content of consciousness determines your karma, mental intention within. So all this you start to see. Then you start to understand. Then when you understand all this, the next mindfulness, Dhammanupassana category of practice is what? Mindfulness or what? 7 factors of enlightenment. You remember? This is step 9 in the Avijja Sutta. So when you cultivate the 4 foundation of mindfulness, by the time you reach there, the 7 factors of enlightenment keep on arising. Where you would have finished Kayanupassana, Vedanupassana, Chittanupassana. Then now Dhamma. And the Dhamma you have come almost the full way. The last one that you haven't done is the 3 turning of the 4 noble truth. But before the 3 turning of the 4 noble truth, you must have reflected and contemplated under listening to the Dhamma. That's why you have done part of the mindfulness of the 4 noble truth already. Then when you cultivate the 4 foundation of mindfulness, it's all about direct seeing with the silent mind. Bhavana Maya Panya. That's why that one is very penetrative. That's the reason why by the time you move into Dhammanupassana, you would have understood all those things. Then the 7 factor of enlightenment keep on arising. Sati, Dhamma, Vichaya, Virya, Piti, Pasati, Samadhi, and Upeka. All this will arise. Then you know you are on the right path. You know you are destined for enlightenment. That's why the step 10 is enlightenment in the here and the now. So the Avijja Sutta has all the components there. And it's very, very clearly highlighted. And you know what is avijja and ignorance. So the Buddha purposely spoke this sutta. Sutta on ignorance. Here they got the ignorance cycle, how you fall. Then how from the enlightenment cycle, you reverse it. That's why you have to go through all this. That's why he always say, Kayana Metta is 100% of the holy life. You remember he told Ananda? At first Ananda told him 50%. He said, no, Ananda. Kayana Metta is 100% of the holy life. Because without Kayana Metta, I realize you cannot find this way. All of the great beings, they are your great Kayana Metta. Do you know that? The Buddhas, the Bodhisattva. Without them, you cannot find the way, I tell you. Without the Sammasambuddha with the Sasana, I tell you, not easy. Yeah? Unless you are a Bodhisattva with the vow. Otherwise, when the Sasana, the window is no more, you cannot find a way, I tell you. Only very, very few, they call it the Pacheka Buddha. And this Pacheka Buddha also must have cultivated before, otherwise they cannot become Pacheka Buddha also. They will become Pacheka Buddha during non-sasana time. So these are the understanding. So I will have to finish off the 9 one. I didn't explain the 9 one. So 8 one, you know, this one is every moment when you have a sense experience, then you perceive the 6 consciousness, then this 7 consciousness is the egoic mind and the discriminative mind when you make mental concocting inside that. So that one is like your internal organ, that organ that trigger off the 8 consciousness. And this is the one that has this content, which has karmic implication. But when you have wisdom, this egoic mind, discriminative mind, no more. You know why? Because sankhara become pure aggregate. No more grasping. That's why no more egoic. No more discriminative. Then the 8 consciousness become pure consciousness. There is no more greed, hatred, and delusion. That's why the arahant is no more ignorant. That's why they cannot have rebirth consciousness. They will die realizing parinibbana. They will not take rebirth, born or ignorant. So this 8 consciousness, they call it the alaya consciousness or storehouse consciousness, because they want to widen the scope. Indirectly, it's karmic consciousness. But as far as I understand, my nature knows there is no such thing. There is only karmic nature. You understand? There is only karmic nature. And everything is recorded in the karmic nature. And that karmic nature is the one that conditions rebirth and all those things. And decide on your karma and all those things. That's why the Buddha said, the moment you are born, the form of mind come, you are born of your karma. Heir to your karma. Conditioned and supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. So karma, you have to be very careful. You cannot play a fool. Because the moment you are born, it follows you. And you are heir to everything that karmic nature do. That's why you don't take care of karma. Karma can never take care of your life. Because your life depends entirely, 100% on karma. You are born of it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it. And you are what you are because of that karmic nature. So take care of the karmic nature. And how to take care of the karmic nature? Cultivate the 10 steps. At least until step 5. When you hit step 5, 6 and 7 is more or less automatic. Sense restraint means your precept is well kept. Your karmic nature is well taken care of. Then the 3 way of right conduct, you have noble evil path already. Right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action. And by then, your 4 right effort you would have cultivated early on. Otherwise, you cannot arise the 3 way of right conduct. So all these are linked. The whole teaching is linked. Then the last one, that the Buddha talked about the 9 type of consciousness. So no place to write. Where to write? Down here. So the 9 consciousness. This one very easy to understand. What is this? Huh? When you go through Nibbana, actually this one is not a consciousness, but they call this the consciousness. They sometimes call it your true nature, your Buddha nature. Yeah. But this is the unconditioned, so it's not a consciousness. The word is wrong. Yeah. That's why sometimes people get so impressed by Mahayana. They say, "Ah, you Theravada, you one type of consciousness only. We got 9, you know." Oh. Then they will tell you, you know what is Tilusa or not? Tichitsa, Tipasa. Actually, it goes back to the 5 aggregate of form and mind. Nothing more than that. It's just that. You know why I can understand this? Because when my mindfulness becomes so stable, I saw all this movement inside my mind. I saw all this. When you are with that type of stability of mindfulness and wisdom, your mind can be at the moment of contact, moment of feeling. It does not run. And you can investigate into it. At that moment, it doesn't move. Yeah, there is no ignorance. And all those craving forces that move all this, no more. That's why it cannot move. And later on, when it becomes pure aggregate, it's even more amazed. How come it's like that? Inside there, like no mind. No movement at all. Everything is so fine. Then you realize this is the supramundane mind. That's why the mundane mind collapses, because the wisdom energy is so pure, the vibration is so fine, that this mundane mind, which is too gross to exist, it will collapse. Like a layer of consciousness drop off one day. And when it drop off, it's just like your sky. Suddenly all the cloud gone. Everything that obscure the sun's ray from penetrating is no more. What happened? The sun's ray penetrated. Our nature is the same. When the mundane mind collapse, I realize this nature shine for all. Then like there is no more of this gross mundane mind, the sankhara, to obscure all. And no more of this wrong thought and all those emotion, sankhara activity or whatever activity. It's like completely clear, gone. Then this one shine for that time, very funny. My nature was so amazing. How come like that? All of a sudden, I can see everything. Nothing has changed. No. But now, everything is so clear. The nature shine for. No. Then like, no need to do mindfulness or awareness because that nature shine for. You are fully aware. And this is what Hui Ning called the mind that has no dwelling. It doesn't dwell anymore. It's that nature that shines forth. That's why it's very different. Very, very different. So when that thing happened, I remember I sat there for 3 or 4 days. I was telling my wife, how come like that? Truth is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. Every moment, every instant, the characteristic of nature is there. Everything is so clear all of a sudden. And that happened in 1989. Now it's 2-0. How many years? Now only I got the chance to explain it. Last time people cannot follow. But you don't worry, yeah? You don't go and look for all this. Your time will come. You can never understand until you go through it. But for most of you, because the Kayamita force is very strong, things are moving very fast. And a lot of you all now have the ability to understand. Actually, the ability to understand this is not easy. it means you have your past cultivation, you have your parami. And this life, not a problem at all. It's very easy for you all to develop the understanding. Listen to the recording. Now with the video, with the audio file and the transcript, you read them, you reflect, you contemplate. You write them down. It's very beautiful. And the Tuesday class on the floor. Where's my handphone? Oh, I remember I put on that small pillow. Then I look, the small table, no more. Then, where is my handphone? Behind my glass. The Tuesday, I sent out the Tuesday class today. My daughter did the transcript. I hardly edited anything. Because now she understands so beautifully. I read to you. Okay, 2nd of July, 2nd of July, Tuesday class, Outline short notes, dated 2nd July, 2019. Only the form and mind that goes through the cessation will understand what Nibbana is. The wisdom will be connected to the form and mind. But this form and mind is not you. That is not a permanent, unchanging entity. The form and mind is just a vehicle and a tool, karmically conditioned for you to come to into this existential world. Your karmic nature conditions the form and mind to manifest again and again. Means every segmented life that you come through rebirth, they are from your karmic nature. Then note number two, Sister Adeline shared that Nibbana is a state of total freedom with no duality, and the five aggregate completely cease, which is correct. The pure awareness also cease. It is the unconditioned. You cannot talk about it. Then number three, enlightenment with residue is when one realizes Nibbana, goes through cessation, but the life force is still there, as it is not yet time for the five aggregate to disperse. So the consciousness will come back to the physical body. So this is Nibbana with residue. Understand? Then number four, a glimpse or a moment of cessation is enough to awaken the form and mind to realize the first and second stage of sinhood, enlightenment. Nibbana is the unconditioned, unborn, unoriginated, unmake. It is the highest bliss. That's why Nibbana Paramang Sukhang. No more suffering to confront. As there is the unborn, unoriginated, unconditioned and unmake, an escape from the birth, originated, make, and the conditioned world is possible. This form and mind need a lot of sustenance to survive, and it must confront suffering, old age, sickness and death, experience separation, and experience problem that comes with life. Example, relationship problem, career problem, loneliness problem, etc. If you don't have a form and mind that needs air to breathe, water to survive, food to sustain, etc., would you want to come to this world? You want to come or not? If you don't have a body that needs so much thing, you want to come or not? No more suffering. All these are first noble truth, reality suffering there. That's why I put there, for us, Dhamma friend, we are very lucky because we know the Dhamma and is able to apply the teaching to avoid all this tragedy, unnecessary mental suffering. You know how to plan your life through following the beautiful advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, cultivate wholesomeness, and keep the precept so that your karmic nature is taken care of. You have this wisdom, understand? That's why you can come with a form of mind, no problem. But if there is such thing as no need to eat, no need to fall sick and all those things, of course, it's better. Number 10. When one walks the Bodhisattva way, this is very beautiful, one is able to live life to the fullest, having realized cessation and yet still able to return to society with such beautiful understanding, life become meaningful, beautiful, and wonderful. The sinhood way is important to understand that escape from suffering is possible, that there is such a thing as the unconditioned. The conditioned and the unconditioned are complete opposite. Yet understanding both the conditioned and the unconditioned are required to fully understand life. This is how to live the good. That is how to live the good and wonderful life of an enlightened being, and for oneself to come into life again and again in future with such understanding. We are indeed very blessed to have the opportunity to live life, to live in such beautiful golden era, especially to have the Dhamma, the merits and the financial means to experience all of the beauties and wonders of life in this transforming digital civilization. You see, she IT graduate, she described it very beautiful. In this transforming digital civilization with all its vast possibility and great potential. Yeah? This is really a golden era, isn't it? You get to experience so much thing during our time, which our forefather never get to understand. This understanding is priceless and completely liberating. True or not? Ah, this one she write on. With the Dhamma, you will have the parami to live the good life, and life becomes smooth sailing and beautiful. You will know how to take care of your karmic nature, and time will be on your side. All this she write on, I never see. Oh, very beautiful, huh? You don't have to be rich to be happy. See? I got mentioned a little bit, but I didn't express it so well. He said, Dhammas make you truly richer than any materialistic wealth can give. Happiness derived from material things may be stolen or lost, but spiritual happiness will never be lost. True or not? Huh? True, huh? Then he says, Sister Adeline asked for clarification on the phrase, you need to have the condition to realize the unconditioned. Yeah. So I explain, condition does not mean you need to renounce to become a monk or a nun. It is not the rope that make one a monk. So it's your choice. Yeah? You don't have to like rigidly say you must go that way. It depends on your understanding, your parami, your past. Because nowadays, in society, if you can really have the determination, the sincerity, the perseverance, you are in a better condition to be tested. To really, really go through the test. That's what I put here. Having the condition means to have serious determination or resolve to choose the spiritual path, to cultivate sincerely with strong faith and understanding. Even as a lay person, you have the resolve, the faith, the sincerity and the understanding. You will progress really fast. In fact, progress will be even faster because of the mind right, life's condition and relationship available to test you. Yeah. So that's all. Eh? Above outline short note was prepared by my daughter, Sui. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. I just received it this morning. Then I look at, so easy to edit on. No need. I hardly edited. I only add in a few words here and there and smoothen out the sentence. And there was joy when I read that because somebody who understands, she just listened to the audio file. Oh, nowadays, I think because of the video. I need your feedback. The video help you to understand. Very clear. With the video, you can see my expression and what I write on the whiteboard. Otherwise, you listen, you will go to sleep, I think. The audio file, most people tell me they cannot concentrate. They don't know what I'm trying to tell them. Well, what I write on the whiteboard also you cannot see last time. But now, at least, you can see what I write on the whiteboard because the video zoom in. So, you should thank Chin Hao. And also the rest who did it. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. I realized the video, I was also so surprised when I saw the video. Wow, so clear. That's why it's so different. And you now listen to the video, you can actually concentrate and listen until the end. Which is very interesting. All the Dhammas are there. And within 2 hours or so, do you realize how much understanding has been shared? And they are all not easily available. And this one, because of your good condition, your good parami, if you take the trouble to listen attentively, to understand, when this one stabilizes, your cultivation becomes very different. That's why you look at my daughter, she is so different now. She wants to retire and come back. Maybe before the end of the year. So a lot of things has happened. She just attended my retreat the last 3 years. She became so different. Yes. That's Sampo Temple. Cameron Highland. Sampo Temple. You know? San Pao Si. Brin Chang there. Every year we have this. Most of the time it's a 9-day retreat. March. March holiday. So that one, that place is very conducive. Well, that was the temple in the year 1989. My nature went through the cessation there when I was up there. It was a 5-day retreat only. It happened up there. Then that abbot, that time, the abbot hasn't passed away, the old abbot. Oh, he liked me a lot. He only speak Mandarin, and I'm English educated, but I can understand Mandarin. And he always smiling. Better end. Just now the alarm went through. Okay, better end. Sadhu. Okay, we'll do the sharing of merits. Then after that, you make your aspiration, then we end. Akasata cha bumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakan tuloka sasana etawata jamehi sampadan sapi deva anumodantu sapa sampati sidya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Devo asatu kalena sasa sampati hetu cha. Veto bawatu loko cha. Raja bawatu dhammiko imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patia sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to the Lord Buddha and all the worthy ones.
Thanks to Brazil for sharing this Dhamma with us tonight.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
And we thank Brother Sri An and Sister Nipong for inviting us to come to their house to listen to this Dhamma sharing.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
And thank you, Sister PG, for fetching Brazil and Sister to make this trip. Sharing.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
I think to all the people for the have not had that many people so far. Today is 28 people here.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
One from Shanghai, one from Perth.
Oh, Christina, are you right now? So, okay, she is the one that works with me.
Okay, next year's retreat is on March 14th to 22nd.
Sorry?
March 14th to March 22nd.
Okay, thank you.
And the birthday gathering is on October 6th.
Venue
to be decided.
We are going for...